Welcome to Tooled Up Education's Researcher of the Month, where the Tooled Up team selects a paper from a notable researcher that will be of interest to parents and school staff everywhere.
Maria Stoilova is a postdoctoral researcher at the Department of Media and Communications, London School of Economics and Political Science. Her area of expertise is at the intersection of child rights and digital technology, with a particular focus on the opportunities and risks of digital media use in the everyday lives of children and young people. She works also on data and privacy online, digital literacy, pathways to online harm, mental health and well-being. Maria has spent the last 10 years researching and publishing on these issues and has joined us today to discuss the pros and cons of using parental controls. Hi, Maria. It's really lovely to have you with us today. How are you doing?
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to, about this conversation. And yeah, thanks.
Brilliant. We're really excited to have you. We've got you with us as our researcher of the month, which is very exciting because you've just recently published a new rapid evidence review to identify why families use parental controls and what the outcomes are of using them. And from reading your paper, I think it's a bit of a mixed bag. So we're very excited to learn more about that. But before we get into sort of talking about your paper in detail, what are parental controls? When we talk about them, what exactly do we mean? Like, are there different kinds? It seems like a bit of a minefield. So it'd be great if you could just talk us through that a bit and maybe give us a few examples.
Indeed, the many different options. So generally, parental controls are software tools that help parents or carers to control what the child sees and does online. Some of these tools operate on the level of the device, for example, the child's phone or a tablet, and others operate on the level of the service, for example, streaming services like Netflix or apps like Snapchat can sometimes have embedded parental controls in them. Or parental controls can be on the level of the operating system like iOS or Android, Windows. They have functions like this, or sometimes even the internet provider. So in terms of what they do, there are different kinds in terms of what they offer. Some functions allow parents, for example, to limit the time that the child spends on the device or on a particular app. Others allow them to track the child's location. They are internet filters or blockers, for example. They block specific websites, or they can block entire categories such as adult content or violence or gambling. And then we have the monitoring and the reporting tools. These track children's online activity and they provide reports to parents such as activity logs or search history, for example. And sometimes they can even send real-time alerts to the parent, for example, when the child does an online purchase. I think social media is also one of the big areas. So these are kind of group of tools that can track interactions, they can track posts, they can track messages on social media platforms. For example, they can allow parents to limit the contact with unknown users. And actually, while most of the parental controls focus on the tracking behaviors of what the child does online, some of them can have a bit more proactive features. We call this nudging functionality. And it means that they try to encourage a bit of a positive behavior and learning from the child. So these apps can provide positive feedback or they can give rewards to the child when they stick to safe online practices. They can suggest educational content or track progress. So as you can see, there's a lot of options. So it can be overwhelming for parents to know which one to choose.
Absolutely overwhelming. I'm a parent of one teen and one slightly tween, I guess you'd call her. You know, and it is overwhelming. There's so many to choose from. No one really knows what's the best one to use. Is there any resource that you'd recommend that parents can go to sort of find out more in detail about what the good ones are?
Yes, I think when parents are looking for resources, they need to see who has created the resource. And I would recommend resources by organizations that work with children, that have history of working with children and learning from that experience. Or they also base their resources on research. So organizations like the NSPCC or Safer Internet Centers, Internet Matters, they all have resources that speak to parents' needs, but also are robust in terms of what they can say about the best practices. rather than basing the recommendations of what we see in the media, which tend to be the worst case scenarios and they can create panic in parents.
Yeah.
I think relying on research and knowing what's working is the best way forward.
Fantastic advice, something that we believe in greatly at Tooled Up. Moving on to your paper, I think that you were trying to identify why parents use parental controls and then the outcomes, is it beneficial or not really? And I think that after a data search of papers, you've sort of identified 40 studies from around the world that you finally included in the review. Is that right?
Yes.
Would you be able to tell us a bit about your methods and actually just why you wanted to investigate this topic? Why is it important to know why parents are using these?
Yes, absolutely. Parental controls are widely recommended to parents, whether by policymakers or by technology industry, is a way of keeping children safe online. So there's a lot of buzz around them and there's more and more options are becoming available. So the obvious question for us to ask was, are parental controls effective in their promise of better online protection? Who uses them and why? Do they have the desired outcomes? And to do that, we wanted to examine the evidence. And this work was done as part of a large project called EU Consent and funded by the European Union. So in that project, we wanted to explore the different age verification options because currently the internet doesn't know who is a child online.
Yeah.
Even though worldwide, about 1 in 3 users is a child, we still cannot identify them reliably. So as part of these efforts, we conducted a rapid evidence review on age verification and parental controls. And without going to the technical detail of what that means, is that we created a carefully designed strategy and we looked at the relevant databases. We screened a lot of sources and selected all the sources that were relevant and of high quality. And we also asked experts to suggest good resources to us. So throughout this process, we ended up with 4 good studies that we analyzed in more depth.
Brilliant. And you identified, I think, 4 key themes, which were the sort of main motivations for parents using parental controls, which I think are parenting styles and values, risk aversion and safety, child development and parental skills. So could you just briefly talk us through each of those and what you found?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. When we looked into who uses parental controls and why, we found these kind of 4 groups of reasons. And let's start with an easy one, risk aversion and safety, for example, because this is an easy one to guess.
Yeah.
So we found that parents who use parental controls tools, they have safety concerns or they want to protect their children. The interesting aspect here is that when parents think that there's a lot of risk or that the risks are significant or that their child is more likely to be affected, then they turn to parental control. So not everyone is equally concerned.
Mm.
So the second one, as you mentioned, was parenting styles and values. And we found that parental controls are used more by parents who are more involved in their children's online activities to start with, but also those who think that they can benefit from such tools.
Mm.
Interestingly, also parents who have more authoritarian style of parenting, so those who have more rules or who grant less autonomy to the children, they seem to use parental controls more often. And on the other hand, those parents who worry about their children's privacy or autonomy, they tend to use them less. So the third group of kind of reasons was related to the child development and needs. So the parental controls seem to be more used when the children are younger. They are more used in larger families when, for example, children share devices. So parents want to distinguish between the older and younger kids in the family. Or when they think that their child still lacks the skills to use the internet safely. So they want this kind of additional reassurance. And finally, parental skills matter. As I mentioned at the beginning, there are so many different options available. So it's not surprising, really, that parents themselves need the digital skills to know how to choose the tools and how to use them. So younger and more skilled parents use them more. Mm-hmm. And I think this is an important point to make because it shows that governments cannot really rely on these technical tools to be solutions for online risk for everyone, and other measures are needed.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you found that actually they're used by not very many parents. I think there was one statistic in your paper that said that parental controls are being used by less than 3% of parents in across all countries that included a specific question. Is that right?
You are referring to the YouKids Online study where I've only recently been involved in this, but one of the co-authors, Sonia Livingstone, has been involved from the beginning when they started in 2010. So when we looked at the data, we found very interesting differences in parents' views about their digital age of independence, for example.
Yeah.
And while in some countries the parents are more relaxed and happy for the child to make decisions at a younger age, in other, they want to be involved until later. And this shows that age is not a clear indicator, because parental control tools need to allow for the gradual scaffolding of children's internet use, their gradual independence. And this actually can be a good criterion for choosing a parental control tool. So does it fit your current needs? Does it allow your child to grow? And you're right that the proportion of parents who use some form of monitoring was also very different. So it varied from about 1 in 10 in some countries to about 1 in 3 in others. And the monitoring of app use overall was more frequent than, for example, tracking the child's location. But again, this also varied between the countries. And I think one possible explanation of this is that some parents worry more than others about possible negative effects on, for example, children's privacy or autonomy or decision-making. But the data in New Kids Online show that it's actually at least 1 in 5 parents across all the countries that worries about these privacy issues. So again, this can be a good indicator for families when choosing the tools. How much does it protect children's privacy? How safe is the data? Who has access to it? These could be good questions to ask before deciding.
That's really interesting. So moving on to the outcomes that you found, I note from reading your paper that there are definitely some positives, but there were also some neutral outcomes of using parental controls and actually also some negatives, which, you know, might surprise some listeners, because we're constantly told we must use them, we must use them. And actually, not all of the things that they are doing are beneficial to our children, although some of them are. Could you just sort of talk us through what those findings were?
Yeah, absolutely. It was very interesting for us as well. And it shows that we do need to look at the evidence of effectiveness, because the marketing strategies are sometimes, you know, very assertive of the outcomes, positive outcomes of these services. But when we looked at the actual data, we found that the outcomes are quite mixed. Yes. So to start with the good part of the story, they were beneficial outcomes. Of the 40 studies, about 17 showed some beneficial outcomes of the use of parental control. So these were mostly linked to reduction of online risks. So they were reducing, for example, things like sexual content, cyberbullying, problematic gaming. There were also reduction of risks like illegal downloading and stuff, access to self-harm content, to educational material, to harmful advertising as well. And also there were some positive practices that were encouraged by the use of parental controls. So, for example, improved time management was one of these, improved communication, or a better identification where the child needs help. But this is where the good part of the story ends, because about 12 studies show that there's actually no change. Nothing happened. They weren't doing anything that they were supposed to. They appeared either ineffective, or they were easy to bypass, or just unable to provide the expected protection they just weren't doing. And then it becomes even more contentious and complicated, because we found that they were also limiting, what we call limiting outcomes. So that means that parental controls actually reduce some of the beneficial opportunities. For example, they restrict educational content. In the longer term, they can lower the digital skills of the child. They limit social interaction in some cases. And the most counterintuitive, I think, finding is that sometimes they can have adverse outcomes. So the use of parental controls can be linked to more family conflict or distrust, or the child feels that their privacy or autonomy have been affected. So the top finding is that the results are mixed.
Yeah.
And parental controls are actually not a silver bullet that resolves all online safety problems. It also doesn't come to one solution being great and then the rest are not. Generally, all the options have pros and cons. So when deciding about parental controls, families need to think about the trade-offs, I think. When they're gaining something, what is the cost of their gain? For example, if you're tracking your child's location, who else is tracking this location with you?
Yes. I mean, it's really about looking at each individual family, looking at their own circumstances and working out together via discussion, really, what works best. Is that what you'd advise?
Yes, definitely. Yes.
Yeah. I know that, you know, speaking from experience, my son, who's 13, went through a bit of a phase of going on, well, he probably still is in this phase of watching Zelda videos on YouTube for hours on end. And, you know, I have in the past put limits on his iPhone, and he hates it when I do that. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually not doing that at the moment. We're having more of a negotiation about it. But, you know, what are children's opinions of parental controls? Do we know? Have they been asked in research?
Yeah, well, this is a great question, because one of the important findings from our work was that children are rarely consulted during the development of parental control tools. And we need to find better ways to include children in such product development, but also I think generally in the design of the digital environment, because when they are asked in research, they have important contributions to make. So the studies that looked at what children think show that some children experience them as positive. So for example, children value having control over their internet use, or they recognize the positive aspects of parental controls. Occasionally, they even install them themselves to assist their self-discipline, or even to negotiate with their parents. They can show their parents and say, well, listen, this is what I'm doing. There's nothing dangerous. Can you allow me to do more of this? But also the evidence shows that children, as you said, sometimes can find restrictions frustrating, especially when they see them unjustified. And some of the restrictions can seem excessive. So in some cases, parental controls, for example, can overblock content. And in this way, they can limit the access to harmless content or content that can help them learn. I remember once using my daughter's computer when she was younger and still had parental controls on this. And I was doing some research and looking into the rights of children, and I couldn't search anything that had the word sexuality in it, because sexual reproductive health is one of the examples where things are overblocked because parental controls can't easily distinguish this from any adult sexual content. And children can find these excessive restrictions very annoying.
Well, and they can experience education.
Yes, exactly. So they can learn, and then they see that it's not actually working. It's being silly, and they lose interest very easily, and they can try to bypass it. And also they sometimes feel that this is an invasion of their privacy, and this can affect how they engage online. So in one of the studies, there was a child participant that gave quite a powerful example that's really stayed with me since we did this evidence review. And the child said that they're now not going to use the messages and not going to message their friends anymore because their parents can read the messages. And both the child and their friends found this uncomfortable. So these are the kind of situations that we as parents should try to avoid when using parental controls.
Yeah, it's all about working out what makes everyone feel comfortable, rather than just blanket putting on a control that's too limiting.
Yes.
Also, bearing all this in mind and the complexity that clearly there is, we often talk to parents about digital life. And one of the questions that they are most likely to ask us is, what parental controls should we use, and how best should we use them? But, you know, as we've sort of discussed, it's baffling. There's a baffling array of options that they can choose from. There's a baffling array of outcomes seemingly from using them. And some of the parental controls themselves seem to sort of tap into common anxieties that parents might have about children's safety. So if you were a parent of, say, a younger child, a 5 to 12-year-old, what would you say, given all of your knowledge and experience, is the most optimal approach?
I completely understand how parental controls can respond to the anxieties of digital parenting, because they can give parents this sense of control and security. They can reduce the worry over children's digital lives, what's happening with their children, what are the kind of risks that they encounter. But I would advise parents that this might be sometimes a false sense of security, because while the content risks are somewhat addressed, there are other risks like data processing, for example, or commercial surveillance that remain. So the evidence shows that the use of the technical controls without active and positive involvement in children's digital lives is actually likely to harm your relationship with your child. It can create conflict over media use. It can lead the child to share less with their parent about online experiences, just overall poorer family communication. So I think it's important for parents to know that parental control measures are insufficient on their own and need to be used within a broader parental monitoring and learning about the online environment and both the risks and the opportunities of this environment. Because if you go in very strongly and just talk about the risk to your child, and your child knows that they're having fun online, they're socializing, there's so much that they benefit from, they will think that you have only a partial perspective. So it's very important for you to show interest in both the goods and the bads that your children are experiencing. And I would say that this is the optimal approach.
So would you advise, you know, we have a resource in our online platform, which is called Family Digital Values, where basically it encourages families to sit down as a group and discuss what you want to get out of the digital world as a family, what your sort of moral compass is when using it, sort of setting some rules and some boundaries, but doing that as a family and respectfully, rather than sort of instilling, you know, just mindlessly putting limits or barriers to or something. Would that be an optimal approach?
Absolutely. Because parents know their children best and children know their own activities. So if a family sits together, they can make decisions about what are the best options, what are the kind of tools that they need to use. Because as we were saying, there are so many different options, but the fact that something exists doesn't mean that you have to use it as a parent. If a child feels uncomfortable about certain options, for example, reading the messages as this kid that I mentioned from the research, you don't have to enable this part, or you don't have to use a service that is very kind of controlling or offers too much surveillance. You need to discuss this with your children and think when children understand the reasons behind the use, they're actually on board on these, it can be much more effective. And the only way to do it is by discussion. And situations change, you have to go over this. But I don't know whether this is a fair requirement for parents because they're so busy, it takes so much time for them to find out the different options.
Mm.
So it can be overwhelming. So parents probably need support from the industry to create better resources, from regulators to create a better environment of regulation. So I don't think we should rely only on parents and trust them with all the responsibility. That's not a fair ask of the parents and of the children as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there needs to be enough regulation in place to allow parents to sort of parent rather than police, I guess.
Like, exactly.
Yeah. What about for teens? Are parental controls worth considering for teens, or do they basically just bypass them? You know, how can we ensure that any controls that we are using are age appropriate and sort of enable children's growing agency and capacity to make their own choices whilst also protecting them?
Yeah, this is a really important question. And I also think it's a very difficult decision for parents to make, because we discussed the UKIDS online data a bit earlier. And the data shows that overall parents think that around the age of 13, children are ready to use the internet independently, but not parents of teens, interestingly. They think that 13 is too young. So the older the child gets, the longer parents want to have oversight of their
internet. That's really interesting. Use.
But on the other hand, children, they want to enjoy more freedom, especially as they get older. They want to be able to be unsupervised more and do more. And not being able to do what their friends are enjoying can be really like isolating for them. It can break the children's trust in the relationship with their parents. Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking of suddenly introducing parental control as a way of monitoring or controlling a growing teen who is suddenly starting to feel more independent, I would say that this is a very bad idea. And your teen will probably agree with me.
Mm.
So if you're already using parental controls, I think you need to start much earlier on. But if you're already using them and your child becomes a teen, you need to discuss with your child how to gradually allow them to have more freedom and just give them a chance to learn and to develop, and also prove to them that you trust them. It's a mutually trusting relationship.
Yeah. Great advice. In your paper, I'm just going to read a quote from it, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
In your paper, you note that the few co-design studies conducted with parents and children resulted in the production of better tools. By contrast, parental controls that rely on privacy-invasive techniques, authoritarian rule-setting or strict measures tend to be ineffective and are not viewed positively by parents or children. Should parents ever use these kind of parental controls without their child's knowledge? What does the research show about that?
I would personally never justify using deception as part of parenting, online or offline. Maybe Father Christmas is an exception.
Yeah.
But it just set things off in a completely wrong direction for me. And some of the parental control marketing strategies that I came across online, they take pride in how undetectable they are for children. But I think this is actually counterproductive. The evidence showed that it's against the children's interest, because how is the child going to learn from this experience, which is the aim of it? Or how is the parent going to justify their decisions when they cannot tell the child, well, I know that this has happened, therefore, you know, I'm implementing these measures to make it safer. Not to mention that this is against children's rights. So the evidence doesn't support this. And I think the ethics of parenting don't support this. And the large amount of parents who actually worry about children's privacy shows that parents actually don't want to do this themselves.
Yeah. So, I mean, parental controls that are used in that way, that's not really respecting children's digital rights. I think you work a lot across children's digital rights, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so when we are so restrictive in that way, do you think it is impacting negatively on empowering children to learn about online risks themselves and develop coping skills?
Yeah, I love the question about children's rights, because there's so many interesting things that can be said about this. And maybe to start with is that parental controls are not necessarily against children's rights, but in fact, they can support them, like the right to safety. But it depends on the design and it depends on how they're used. by parents. So one important implication from parental controls is that children's right to protection seems to be prioritized over other their rights. Yeah. For example, the measures, they prioritize the safety, and sometimes it comes at the expense of rights such as participation, or as you were saying earlier, learning or privacy. Mm-hmm. And we found that overall, many of the measures don't respect children's right to privacy or autonomy overall, and such measures can sometimes enable the inappropriate or undesirable degree of parental surveillance. And I don't want to blame parents for this. Sometimes when the tool is there, they feel like they should know how to use it, or they should use it. Or sometimes they're just naturally worried because of all the things that the media describe about the negative effects. It tends to be creating media panic. So parents sometimes are just with very genuinely nice intentions going for the wrong decisions. But we also found interesting what we've been saying, you know, you need to help your child to grow. But the increasing capacity of the children to make their own choices is largely unsupported by parental controls, because we found that there's little evidence that they're available to consider their developing capacities, and they don't have the process of granularity that can support these changing needs. It's also down to the parents to make these adjustments, which can be time consuming, difficult to judge. And also finally to say on child rights, but I think very importantly, is that such measures might actually discriminate against some children, because the designs that assume that there is an engaged, there is a caring, or even digitally skilled adult present in the children's lives will discriminate against all the children whose circumstances are different from this.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So any parent who wants to sort of co-create digital family rules and responsibilities and, you know, encourage children to self-regulate their use of digital devices and the ubiquitous screen time, what would be your best advice for people to go about doing that in the home environment?
First of all, I want to make it clear that screen time is not the problem. Mm. We are currently doing a study on internet use and adolescent mental health called DIORA. And one of the early findings is that screen time does not explain mental health problems such as depression and anxiety. So it's not how much time children spend online, but it's what they do once they are online. Yeah. So speak to your children about the quality of their time. From both online and offline are equally important. So are they learning? Are they socializing? Are they being playful or creative? Is it beneficial for them? Is it balanced? This isn't what actually matters for children. Yeah. And it's important to acknowledge that there's always going to be a mixture of risks and benefits. You can't have one without the other. So when children face these risks online, they actually learn, they develop, they build their resilience. So when they encounter risk, it doesn't necessarily mean that children will experience harm. This is very important for parents to reflect on. So when they're co-creating these family rules, they have to be realistic about their expectations and to be balanced in the approach. So don't restrict too much, because such rules are actually unhelpful and they're hard for children to follow.
Yeah. So it's all about having open conversations, evolving as children grow and develop, respecting their growing agency and knowledge, and just really building that trusting, open dialogue within the family life.
Absolutely. Yes.
Brilliant. A couple of things that parents sometimes ask us. If you are using parental controls, is it better to go through your Wi-Fi provider or individual apps? What's the difference? This is more of a technical question, I suppose, but
interesting one, a practical one, because, you know, sometimes these are some of the decisions that parents have to make. I would again say that this will depend on how your child uses the internet. So, for example, if you go through the Wi-Fi provider, this is a good solution when the child uses internet mostly at home. And it also provides control via just one kind of centralized system. But say the child uses a mobile phone to get online and then they use this device outside the home. They go to a friend's house, or they can go to a place where they offer free Wi-Fi, like a restaurant. So for that case, app controls would be better, because they will be valid across different types of connections. The downside here, for example, is that each app offers different options. It will take more time to set this up, and then the child can still install new apps, and you have to, you know, keep doing this. And children move very quickly between the different apps. They follow the trend, they follow their friends. So it's a non-stop game. It's like a couch game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess it comes back to the thing that we've been reiterating for the last 30 minutes, which is that, you're only going to find that out if you're talking about their digital life and engaging with it and asking what they're doing and taking an interest in it in a positive way. Otherwise, you're not going to know what apps they're putting on.
Absolutely. And they're no perfect solutions. And I have to keep saying this. I'm really sorry, but that's the reality of it.
No, absolutely, it's the reality. We're also often asked which parental control is the best. Is that even a question that you can even answer? Or is that just an unanswerable question?
I think from what we've discussed so far, it's clear that there's no one solution that will work for every family and every child. And the best way forward for every parent is to discuss with their child and decide together what works best for them, depending on what they're trying to achieve, because the different options offer different solutions to different problems. So they need to make adjustments when their circumstances change. And I think most importantly, parental control should be used to enable the child to use the internet safely, to encourage them to think about their online activities, to learn new digital skills, to learn how to be independent, rather than to be seen as something that is restrictive and stopping them. I think that's most important. That's as much as I can say about.
That's perfect. But sort of just to wrap up the questions about your paper, what three things would you like all parents, like key messages that all parents could take away about the use and efficacy of parental controls? What would be the three sort of quickfire tips that you'd give all parents?
Mm-hmm. So I know that parents feel a lot of pressure these days and find it hard to know how to parent. So my first one would have to be something around trying to give them a bit more reassurance. They don't have to know everything. They don't have to use something just because it's out there, and building a trusting and supporting relationship with your child so they feel that they can come to you it will always be the most important step. So I spent the last 3 years researching digital skills and literacy with colleagues across Europe for a project called Youth Skills. And we actually found that children often lack the critical skills that help them evaluate material, that help them find reliable sources, or even distinguish fake information. So if you, as a parent, feel that you're not particularly good with digital technologies, you can still give valuable parenting advice. You can teach your child how to think critically. And that's not only related to the digital environment. So you don't need the digital skills to do that. So my first point will be to parents that you can do it. You have a lot to offer to your child. The second has to be around parental controls. And it's probably going to be that they are a mixed blessing. They have some benefits and they have some downsides. So if you're using them, you must not rely on them completely. Include them more as one of the many tools in your digital parenting. An approach that just restricts your children's use actually also restricts their skills. It restricts their learning, their communication. It limits socialization. So overall, just restriction limits the beneficial outcomes in the long run. And we live in a digital society when children will need these skills for education, for employment, for their whole life. So use a more balanced approach. I want to encourage the child to use the internet. I want to teach them to how to do it safely. So this is much and more valuable every day in today's digital society. And you said three, so third one would be, I think, to make decisions with your child, not for your child. So you can share your concerns, you can explore different options together. You don't have to know it all. You can decide what would be the most suitable, valuable, helpful. Choose something that your child wants to use and knows what the benefits will be. So in this way, you will avoid possible conflicts. You will support your child to learn. You'll support their long-term development. And also, importantly, children learn a lot from their friends. So if your child becomes a competent user, they'll also teach their friends, and this will create an overall safer environment around them. So I think we need to end on a positive note, and this would be my top three.
That is all such brilliant advice. It's so empowering and reassuring that, you know, actually parents can do a lot to help children live a fruitful and safer digital life.
Absolutely. I believe that. I believe in parent power and children's power in combined.
Absolutely. Working together. And just one very final thing. It sounds like you're working on loads of interesting projects at the moment. Can you just tell us a little bit about anything interesting that you're working on at the moment?
We are currently with colleagues working on mental health. And for another project, we are also looking at how families use platforms in their family communication. So we're looking at three-generation families, which is really exciting because it offers insight on how things change for the generations, but also how technology can sometimes bring people together and separate them at the same time. So there's a lot of interesting things happening. And actually, a good place to follow if people are interested is at my Department of Media and Communications at LSE. We've just established a joint center with the Five Rights Foundation called Digital Futures for Children. So we're going to be, Sonia Livingstone is one of the people who's leading this center. So there will be a lot of work related to children's best interest and safety by design. So if anyone is interested, that's a good place to follow for the newest research and evidence on what's best for children's rights.
That sounds fantastic. We'll be sure to include that in our notes. I think this has been a really interesting discussion, and I think it will benefit loads of parents to know, just to understand a bit more about the minefield that are parental controls and what the best way to use them well is. So thank you so much, Maria. We've really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you. It's been a great conversation. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
This podcast is brought to you by Tooled Up Education, the home of evidence-based tips on parenting, family life and education. www.tooledupeducation.com. Parents and teachers in Tooled Up schools can also access notes accompanying each podcast, available to read and download from the Tooled Up site.